Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to the 322nd edition of the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. In Nashville, Tennessee, I'm Matt Perkins. And a quick slant across the Harpeth River from me here in the Music City, it's our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton.
What's up, Matt? I took the driver's seat last week. I think we were already on episode 470, so...
Yeah, it was impressive. It was, I think, 467 is what yeah, it ended up... is what
you guys like that. It was great, man. But glad to have you back, man. I'm excited. It's a good week for football. So let's get it.
It's. I mean, when is it not a good week for football? Even a bad week for football, it's a good week for football.
It's you speak no lies.
Definitely not. We can't get started without the third amigo in the second city. A man who is in a swarm of Hawkeyes, apparently. It's our intrepid blogger from Big Ten and Counting, Josh Cook.
I'm helping Iowa's NIL by drinking Swarm beer. It's made by Elixir Brewing in Des Moines. So with each can, Iowa's going to get better athletes.
I mean, they need a lot more than just better athletes. I think they could use some better coaches as well.
Hey, now.
We will be talking about your Hawkeyes a little bit later here in our episode, though. Before we do, want to remind...
Matt, I got a hypothetical for you when you finish your ad read. So just remind you.
Okay. Well, you okay?
Great timing. I love that.
Yeah, great timing, Coach. But no, we will get to a hypothetical here in a second. Before we do, want to remind everyone that
Hey, Matt, I've got a second hypothetical for you.
This is the kind of great content you get here on Mike Farrell Sports. And thank you to our presenting sponsor, BetOnline.ag, where they continue to be your number one source for uninterrupted sports wagering anywhere that you need it. You name it, they've got it over there at BetOnline. MLB playoffs in full swing. Me and Coach, our Braves are not looking great. It's really unfortunate. But no matter, NFL, college football, NBA is coming back around. NHL season just started back up. It doesn't matter. It's all over there at betonline.ag. Head on over to the website. Use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code BELIEVE. That's BLEAV. BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, Coach, what's your hypothetical?
All right. So based on our chat conversations, and it just jogged my memory when you were talking about the Iowa coaching situation. So based on our chats, you're a huge fan of Pat McAfee.
Oh, God.
And so my hypothetical is, would you rather listen to 2 hours of Pat McAfee or 2 hours of a Brian Ferentz wide zone clinic?
I'll go. I would go 10 hours of wide zone clinic before 2 hours of McAfee. I cannot stand. Absolutely. I might learn something from a wide zone clinic, at least what not to do. And it won't be just like yelling and screaming at me for no reason. With Mac, he's just going to yell at you, like wear his stupid like cutoff shirts and stuff like that. And I can't. He is a scourge on college football. So I will.
Scourge, yeah, big ACT word.
I didn't even take an ACT, so we didn't do those things back up in old New England.
It was
so
all Josh, SAT for me.
You know it, Josh. I think you and I are probably in the same boat when it comes to that.
What?
McAfee.
I don't speak of him.
Well, there we go. We do, though. We speak
if
a
you
lot.
Have nothing, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Then why do you ever say anything? Because almost everything you say isn't nice.
Josh should just become a mute. Be a hell of a podcast. Just Josh is just sitting there like, all right, Josh, what's your take?
Mm-hmm.
Dynamite mm-hmm. drop in, Monty. These broadcasting classes are really starting to pay off.
They don't call him the best color man in the business for nothing, folks. Okay. We are going to start here, episode 322. Our one big takeaway each from last week. I'm going to start. I was traveling a lot, but I did actually get to see a fair amount of football this past weekend. And one of the games that I got to watch almost in total was Louisville Notre Dame. And Louisville beat Notre Dame. And the score said it was, 33-20. It wasn't even that close, guys. Like, Louisville put on a clinic against Notre Dame. They didn't just beat them. They completely handled business, left zero doubt. Jeff Brohm, doing better than I think anyone could have anticipated in year one. Hasn't been the toughest of schedules yet, but still, like, they are playing complete football, complimentary football, positive mm-hmm. in the turnover margins, some huge transfer portal additions that are being put to good use. You look at Jamari Thresh, who I talked about before the season as one of my favorite transfer receivers in the entire nation. Everything that's going on at Louisville right now is just top notch. I am completely blown away. Ron English, I completely bashed him as a coordinator hire. That defense is doing really well. That defense is doing some real things. They've got some dudes there rushing the passer. I am as impressed with Louisville as I am with anyone in the country this season in terms of what I expected out of them and what we have seen out about them. So my big takeaway: Louisville's for real, and they're going to be here to stay as long as Brohm is there.
Yeah, they were getting takeaways. This was my first big glimpse into Louisville, man. That they impressed me a lot. They were explosive. They were flying around the field. They were all over Sam Hartman. They were in his face. They were disrupting throws. They were blanketing receivers. It just seemed like anything Notre Dame wanted to do, they just said, nah, and Notre Dame couldn't handle it.
All right, Josh, what was your takeaway from last week?
Well, I just want to reiterate, I had Louisville as a dark horse. I thought they were, they won 8 games with an incompetent coach last year. And speaking of incompetent coaches,
I should have believed you on Louisville, but I didn't.
I got two just dumbfounding, just malfeasance for coaching decisions. One obviously cost the game, of course. Little action in this town called Miami, where they ran the ball for no reason. And you know what, Manny Diaz? I mean, Mario Cristobal can claim that he's learned his lesson. If you look back at the play logs for all of Miami's previous games, they never went into victory formation. And he blew a game about 4 years ago doing the same thing
against Stanford.
Yeah. So it's incompetent. He's I think we can already write him off. I think this is a defining moment in a terrible tenure. He's a fantastic recruiter.
Yes, he is.
But if you make these types of mistakes, I'm going old school with a basketball reference, just what our listeners love. But George Raveling, he was.
That is a name I have not heard in a very long time, Josh.
He was the Iowa basketball coach right after Lute Olson. Fantastic recruiter. The team stunk. He goes to USC. He's a fantastic recruiter. Never did anything. And most of our listeners have probably never heard of him. That is Mario Cristobal, I think. He's going to be a fantastic recruiter, but he's just not good enough to get Miami over the hump. It's going to be that simple. And he's going to get fired eventually. The other decision was
hired at Arkansas State.
The other decision was over at Maryland. And I don't know how teams keep messing this up. Didn't cost them the game because Ohio State pulled away at the end, but completely beyond irritating. It's final stages of the first half. There's 8 seconds left. Maryland is in field goal range. They have zero timeouts left. They are at, I don't have the stats up in front of me, but they're at like the Ohio State, like 20, give or take a few yards. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, we're going to take a shot at the end zone because we have enough time. Everyone runs to the end zone, but one guy, one lone running back runs a nice little 2-yard curl. And wouldn't you know, who does Ohio State not cover? Who does Maryland throw to? A 2-yard route in the middle of the field. He's quickly tackled, run out of time. If you're going to take the shot, your offensive coordinator needs to, or head coach needs to, get in that huddle and say, everyone is running to the end zone. I don't care what your route is technically on this play call. You're going to the end zone. And you got to tell your senior quarterback, don't throw it to this guy. Like, don't do it. I don't know how coaches keep messing these decisions up.
Okay. I'll defend the coach here on this one. Because he did send guys in the end zone. I'm going to put this on
Talia.
Talia, yeah. Or whatever, however you pronounce his name. I'm going to put this on Talia, because the same thing happened, similar thing happened in the Alabama game, where it wasn't on the coaches. They didn't call this. It was part of an RPO portion of the play, and they're trying to, it was a similar situation that they could have been disastrous, where he throws, all they had to do is kneel on the ball, and Milroe rips it out there to the receiver, and well, he skips it out there, really. and the clock stops, and Saban has to call a timeout, and Saban is furious. It's a similar situation. Like, at some point, like, his instincts probably kicked in. It was like, oh, wide open guy, check down. I was not paying attention to the clock. And when in reality is, he should have just took one step, fired it, and if it wasn't there, just throw it four rows deep, which is what he should have done. But, you know, you're in that situation and you're thinking, well, maybe my guy can break a few tackles and get in the end zone. I don't know what he was thinking, but I know the coaches didn't call for him to throw the 2-yard check down. I know they probably were just as pissed
as
you were.
But you're putting him in a position.
But how do we know the back didn't just do that himself as part of like a check down, you know?
But they had just taken a timeout. So I feel like in that huddle, you tell them, hey, this is the plan. Everyone that's running around is running the end zone. No one do anything.
Yeah, and I mean, you know,
you got to have that conversation.
You do. But
because coaches need to know that. And as you mentioned, players are going to go on instinct.
Yeah, I really think that they are. So
they should have just kept him in protection and just launched it. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I still think that the call was bad. And then it was compounded by Talia Tagovailoa just throwing it to the middle of the field. I mean, he has to understand that's not going to do anything for you. So, coach, what is your big takeaway from last week?
Well, yeah, I was just my biggest takeaway was obviously Georgia beating down Kentucky in a game where I'm sitting there thinking, there's no way we cover this. We'll probably win, but there's no way we cover it. We haven't covered all year long. We're going to start slow. Kentucky's good on defense, especially up front. We're going to have trouble with Ray Davis, and none of that was true. Ray Davis was a non-factor. Devin Leary was a non-factor. Carson Beck started right out of the gate dealing, and Georgia went on to cruise to a 51-13 victory. So Kentucky's still a good team. Georgia was just a beast that woke up, and they had to remind Kentucky, hey, you're Kentucky still. You're not on our level. And Georgia finally had to do that. But it allowed me to watch a lot of that Miami-Georgia Tech game, which I didn't anticipate was going to be a good game to watch. But I kept – my eyes just kept glued to it because it was – well, it wasn't good, but it was like a train wreck, you know. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go watch. And I was flipping between that and Notre Dame-Louisville, which was complete domination. And I come back to it, and I'm like, okay, this game's over. You know, it's like they're about to kneel on it. And I'm like – my mom called me. She's like, can you believe Georgia Tech just scored? I was like, what? Because my cousin coaches there. So, like, she's all invested in Georgia Tech football now. So I click back over and I'm like, oh my God, how did the, how? It's like, they're just going to kneel on it. And I'm like, what happened? And I ran it back. I was like, oh my God, you idiot. Just kneel. But yeah, so it was a really good weekend of football. The A&M game was exciting. I think Milroe finally grew as a passer there. Missouri might be somewhat for real. We were saying Drinkwitz was first.
They've got their own coaching issues, though, that they had in that game as well. And I think LSU is not the team that a lot of people thought they were.
Especially on defense. Yeah.
They're not great. I mean, giving up that many points to Missouri, who basically has like 1.5 players in terms of skill players. Like Luther Burden is 1.5 players by himself, and that's what they've got.
Yeah. And then Cook just slings it up there to him. But, I mean, they're a little bit better than we anticipated. And LSU's a lot worse than we anticipated. And so those two things made for what was an exciting game, which shouldn't have been an exciting game, but it was.
Well, I think there's going to be some exciting games this coming weekend. And so let's hop into I think are five really interesting games, all four of which, well, I think we'll see. We've got some offensive explosion that we're going to talk about first, and that is the Cascade Clash, Oregon at Washington, the 115th matchup between these two programs. And somehow, despite these two schools being as storied as anyone out there on the West Coast, not named USC, it's the first time that they have ever faced off both in the top 10 at the time of the game. Josh, like we said, two of the top offenses in the country. My question to you is, which defense is more likely to create at least a speed bump for the other team? You know, no one's going to get shut down in this game, but which defense has a better chance of creating a speed bump for the opponent?
Well, I did the normal thing when you asked me this type of question, man. I put on my analyst hat and I started to crunch some numbers. So Oregon
action.
What does your analyst hat look like?
This hat, actually. So,
got the Oregon flat going. We're good.
There we go. Oregon, they gave up a season high 30 points way back against Texas Tech in Lubbock. You know, Texas Tech, we know, good offensive team. Last few weeks, they've given up just 12 points total. They are down to just 11.8 points allowed per game. It's tied for fifth best in the country. The Huskies, They given up a little bit more, 18.4 points per game, which is tied for 26th. Although some of that is like the Cal game, for instance, they won 59-32. Cal scored 13 fourth quarter meaningless points. So neither of these teams are giving up a lot of points. So then I was like, okay, well, what about like star power? What's going on? And I found something pretty big, I would say, crunching all these numbers. Washington has just 6 sacks on the year. That's it.
It's not very much.
Oregon has 18. So to answer your question, your question, who's going to create a speed bump? I think it's Oregon, and led by defensive end Jordan Birch, who's got 3 sacks on the season. I think Oregon has more potential to get their pass rush going and more potential to create a speed bump. Does that mean I'm going to take Oregon? Probably not. Personally, the fact that it's in Seattle, and as awesome as Bo Nix has been playing this year, I've seen Michael Penix in huge games. I saw him lead Indiana to glory. He just has this extra level, it seems like, when the spotlight's on him. So I do like Washington this game, but I think Oregon is more likely to create some speed bumps, and maybe that's enough for Oregon to win the game.
I mean, I think anytime you have a defense schemed up by Dan Lanning, who has learned from some of the best, and Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, that is recipe alone, and their stats speak for themselves as far as points, sacks, havoc plays, things like that. However, I think, you know, while they're going to create enough of a speed bump, I think the weather is going to play a huge factor. I think it's supposed to be typical Seattle weather, rainy, a bit cold, I think. And the home atmosphere for Washington, I think, will play a factor in this one. And I just think it's going to come down to who wins the fourth quarter, because I think it's going to be a very back and forth game. And I think Michael Penix is that dude. I've seen Bo Nix not do it at Auburn as much as, Josh, you've probably seen Michael Penix do it at Indiana. So I think, just given those things right there, I think Washington is a little bit more physical of a team just in general. And I think that'll play a factor. Oregon does have the better defense, better pass rush, better, you know, better stats defensively. But I don't know, just in a win situation, I don't know if Oregon's offense will be able to generate enough to get over the hump. So I think, in essence, this game is not going to be the offensive explosion that we're thinking it's going to be. I think there's going to be some good offense, but I also think there's going to be a lot of great defense as well mixed in there. And you're going to see some really good defensive plays followed up by some really good offensive counters. And I think this is going to be the game to watch. It's certainly not going to be Georgia Vanderbilt. I can tell you that for certain.
Definitely not. It's definitely the game of the week as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. And I think as far as pretty much everyone is concerned, it looks like the rain's going to hold off in Seattle on Saturday, but it might be pretty windy out there. The one matchup I'm interested to see, those Washington receivers, I think, is probably the best receiving core in the country. And it's going to be interesting to see how they adapt to the wind. And also, like, I don't think Oregon has the dudes to cover them, to be frank. I don't think anyone has the dudes to cover them, not even Georgia, not even Alabama, not even, you know, maybe if you could clone Cooper DeJean a couple more times, maybe Iowa could do it, but that's really about it. So
mark my words, Iowa would beat Washington.
We never
have to worry about that game.
Yeah, they're not playing.
Because Iowa's going to go to, like, the Alamo Bowl at best, and Washington's probably going to the playoffs.
Yeah,
meaningless statement. In reality, an Iowa-Washington game will be – Iowa is very plucky for a quarter and a half. But once Washington has run 100 plays to Iowa's 15 – the defense gets a little tired.
Yes. Yes. Unfortunately, that is what happens. Well, we talked about some questionable coaching decisions earlier in the show, Josh, and Coach. And, you know,
we're returning to it again.
We're going to return to it again because Miami, this taking on UNC, this should be a matchup of undefeated teams. This really should be a matchup of undefeated teams. But Mario Cristobal, his team, because I think that's what we have to call it a crystal balling now, not taking a knee. He's done it twice in, like, in very specific situations, and he's never taken a knee this season. So, Coach, even before the U fumbled the bag, though, they looked just sloppy and bad in general against the rambling wreck of Georgia Tech.
Yeah,
and, they did. You know, but still, they should have come away with victory.
They snatched defeat from the jaws of victory.
Very impressive. Coach, what do Shannon Dawson, Tyler Van Dyke, and Don Chaney Jr. and the rest of the Canes need to do to get back on the right foot and, you know, keep up with the Tar Heels team, who is putting up points in bunches once again?
Well, they're going to have to keep up with them. First of all, they're going to take care of the ball. I mean, they turned the ball over a lot against Georgia Tech. It was a sloppy game. Penalties were a mess. They moved the ball fairly well on Georgia. And Georgia Tech just changed defensive coordinators. That made a huge difference in this game, or in that matchup last week. But I just don't see them slowing down this Tar Heels offense, to be honest with you. But in order to keep up with them, they need to figure out ways and quick, easy passes early to get Van Dyke in a rhythm, which they never did last week against Georgia Tech. They just thought they could just roll out there and beat them. I think you'll see a little bit better of a Miami team, a little bit less sloppy maybe. But if they can get Van Dyke into a rhythm early, he's talented enough to move the ball. And I don't think the Tar Heels are stalwarts on defense, but – as far as stopping Drake May and that offense, I mean, they're rolling too. So if Miami's going to win, they're going to have to win in a shootout. This is not going to be, you talk about no defense. This one's going to have defense optional, truthfully. Don't look at the defensive stats here. Just don't do it. just don't do it. Miami's just going to have to – they're just going to have to dust off and move forward and figure out a way to get into a rhythm. I mean, I know that's just kind of a standard canned answer, but easy passes early, get the run game going, and you'll be just fine. Control the clock, take care of the ball, all the basic maxims of offensive football.
Well, I'm going to just imagine for a moment that Miami didn't screw up against Georgia Tech. So it is a 5-0 matchup. Who is better? Who is more likely to win? Well, when you look at the matchups, both of them have played a completely mid-level, not going anywhere SEC team. North Carolina has played an in-state Appalachian State team, very hungry to beat them. And that's probably better than anyone Miami's played, although the Miami Redhawks haven't lost since that game. North Carolina has a out-of-conference Power 5 team in Minnesota who they beat pretty handily, and the Gophers at least have a competent defense. Miami jumped down to FCS rank, Bethune-Cookman, and played a really struggling Temple team and then looked sloppy against Georgia Tech. North Carolina has played the tougher schedule. They've played the tougher schedule looking better. They have a clear advantage at quarterback. Mm-hmm. They have a clear advantage in their offensive scheme and are just like completely in rhythm offensively. I think even if this was an undefeated matchup, you're looking at a pissed off team that should be in the top 10. North Carolina should be a top 10 team. They're playing at home. They're the better team, better schedule. I would be absolutely dumbfounded if North Carolina or if Miami rallied to win this game. And that's even if I'm playing the hypothetical of it being a 5-0 matchup. Factor in my coaching concerns coming off a terrible loss. I think North Carolina wins this. I think we're talking about it, maybe not on the show next week because it'll be a rout, but I think privately in our text thread, we might be like, oh my God, North Carolina won by 4 touchdowns. What? Like, I really like this spot for the Heels.
Yeah, I don't think that we'll be talking, frankly, about, well, definitely not North Carolina next week because they're playing Virginia next week. So that is definitely a game we will not be previewing.
Rivalry.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
One team, though, we've talked about a lot this year, and even more than I expected, Notre Dame. I talked about them in my opener. They lost to Louisville, second loss in the season. Pretty much takes them out of playoff contention, but they have one of, if not their biggest rival, coming to town this weekend, and that is the Fighting Irish, I don't know, Fighting Trojans, the University of Southern California. The Irish defense, though, I think that was their game, in the game against who the first time they really broke this year. Even when they lost to Ohio State, their defense really showed up, even with only 10 men on the field at times. This defense, though, still light years ahead of the Trojans. USC gave up 41 last week to Arizona. They need triple overtime to beat a true freshman fourth string quarterback. Not great. So, Josh, is this finally the weekend where Caleb Williams cannot overcome and cannot bail out Alex Grinch's defense in that awful unit? Or will we still see again, you know, that USC offense just, you know, continue to light it up and, you know, drag along the defense with them to remain undefeated? Yeah.
Well, first of all, we should be kind to Coach Freeman there. USC, multiple times this season, has trotted out 10 men. They've had their own issues. So they might both be going 10-man for this game. Look, there's something we really need to talk about with USC. I know Caleb Williams, the offensive numbers are awesome. I know Alex Grinch, the defense, struggling. But we are at 6-0 for USC. That's half their season. I think it's fair to talk about strength of schedule. San Jose State is a team that we all liked in the offseason. They have completely fallen apart. They're 1-5. Nevada is 0-5. Stanford is the worst team in the Pac-12, unless it's Arizona State, who they've also played. Mm-hmm. They beat that Colorado team that we still don't know exactly what it is. And if that game had been about 5 minutes longer, Colorado was winning it. And then, as you mentioned, Matt, triple overtime to Arizona, a team that we kind of liked for like sniffing around a bowl, but not taking the Trojans to triple overtime. They've played some real clunkers this season. They've barely beaten a couple teams. This USC team is not playing like a top 10 team. If this was basketball season, you could tell I'm getting excited for college basketball, but if this was basketball season, this would be the classic like 5-12 game where you're like, why is this USC team a 5 seed? There's something smelly about them. There's something off about them. Notre Dame backed into a corner, rivalry game at home, that stingy defense, prime time on NBC. I think this is an interesting game for Notre Dame. I think there's a really good chance they get off the mat and pull this upset because there's a lot to not like about USC.
I really like Notre Dame in this matchup, which means that USC will come out and like score 30 points in the first half and it'll be over. But my question though for you, Coach, who does less with more, Mario Cristobal or Alex Grinch?
I'm going to say Alex Grinch right now because I don't know if I've ever seen a defense perform under him.
Yeah.
Either at Oklahoma or USC.
He had one season at Washington State that he had a really good defense. And that got him the Oklahoma job. And since then, it's been all downhill. It's crazy how, like, if you look at on paper star rankings, and we know, like, recruiting rankings aren't everything. USC's defense, by, like, the star rankings, they should have the top defense in the conference.
Yeah. I mean, you get a transfer, not to be a little bit biased, but you get Bear Alexander as a transfer. That dude Animal. Is Jalen Carter light, dude. Like, that dude is a beast, and you're getting
he's a bear. All over.
He's a bear. He literally is a bear. And you can't do anything in your front seven. Like, it's – I don't know what they're doing. Like, you know how you can kind of see what they're trying to do. I can't tell what they're trying to do. I really don't know what they're trying to do or what they're looking at or what their keys are or what's going on with that. But I think, you know, just to go back to your point on – what Notre Dame can do. Notre Dame has been through the freaking ringer. They're tough. They're a team that's trying to figure some things out under Marcus Freeman. They're a team that's not used to being in these positions. They're not a team that's used to being in the spotlight 2 weeks in a row. They pulled it out against Duke, but they weren't able to do so against Ohio State because they're not really used to it. And then they just completely laid an egg against Louisville because, again, they don't know how to respond to two tough weeks like that. Like, this is all new for Marcus Freeman, but you can tell in spots where you're like, okay, when the light bulb comes on, he's getting it. I don't see that with Alex Grinch. And if Lincoln Riley doesn't see that soon, I don't know what to tell you. Like, maybe Lincoln Riley shouldn't be the coach of you. I don't know. I just don't understand how their defense could be this bad.
It's an Alex Grinch thing. It's got to be an Alex Grinch thing. That's the only thing I can imagine, because it's not a talent thing.
Not a talent thing. And I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. I don't understand why he's sticking with him for so long. Like, you just...
I think I've got a conspiracy theory. Here's why you stick with Alex Grinch. The defense plays so poorly, USC needs to put up a whole bunch of points and numbers. You keep Caleb Williams out there longer, you guarantee Caleb Williams is the first overall pick, and then you join him like Coach GQ and you move to Chicago and you are now the new Bears coach.
They don't need a terrible defense to do that. Caleb Williams is a dude. It doesn't matter.
You've heard it here first. Lincoln Riley on Sundays next fall.
I mean, listen, there have been plenty of NFL teams that have been courting Lincoln Riley for a minute now. So that would not surprise me at all. I would not be surprised if things go downhill in Dallas if he's the next Cowboys coach. But we need to move, though, to a couple other of Pac-12 schools, a couple of one-loss Pac-12 schools going this weekend. Oh, wait, so hold on, just quickly, like, I'm taking Notre Dame in this one. Josh, you taking Notre Dame?
I'm leaning towards Notre Dame, and you know what? My feeling last week about leaning towards Louisville paid off, so now I'm going to return the favor to the Irish and go with my gut feeling.
Coach?
Irish, yeah, I'm leaning Notre Dame here because I think
there's the kiss of death. All right. USC is guaranteed to win now. There's the kiss of death.
All right. Well, in that case, let's talk about USC's crosstown rival, UCLA. They are headed up to Corvallis. A couple of one-loss teams cutting it up in what I think is actually going to be a very low-scoring game. UCLA leads the nation in average yards allowed per play. Oh, they're tied. Both Penn State and UCLA are allowing 3.6 yards per play, which is outstanding, absolutely outstanding. Oregon State has a top 30 defense as well. We've seen some struggles with Dante Moore, but that UCLA run game really came up big last week against Washington State in a huge win for the Bruins and that true freshman quarterback. Coach, what I want to know, though, which one of these two teams do you think is more likely to break through offensively and maybe get out to a 14 or a 21-point lead?
I think UCLA probably has that best chance because their defense is going to put them in advantageous positions, because not only are they allowing 3.6 yards per play, but they're also taking the ball away. Like, they had four takeaways against Washington State last week that caused that game to, you know, caused them to win that game. Or won that game for them. And I think with their scheme and what they do, they get a turnover, quick touchdown, they get momentum, here we go. So I think it's UCLA.
Josh, I mean, you love Oregon State as much as anyone. Oh, yeah. And so, yeah. You know, cool. As someone who, you know, has an affinity for UCLA, obviously I'm rooting for the Bruins here, but I still really like Oregon State in this spot.
I love both teams. Don't get me wrong.
And both these teams are great.
This one for me is a no-brainer. Matt, you mentioned Dante Moore struggling. He's got four interceptions on the season to nine touchdowns. His QBR, 42.6.
Not great.
His completion percentage in conference games.
Short fields.
His completion percentage in conference games is under 50%.
That's not good.
His stats are really hinging on just completely blowing out North Carolina Central and San Diego State. That's what's artificially pumping up his numbers. He has not been very good at all against Power 5 teams. And this Oregon State team, I know they're only 30th in scoring defense, but when you look at some of the other numbers, they are really good at messing with a young freshman quarterback. They have 17 sacks. They have nine takeaways on the season. I'm riding that Beaver defense. And obviously, you have a freshman quarterback going up against DJU, who's kind of seen it all and done it all in his college career. Great shot here for Oregon State to win at home. But I do have a question, Matt. Corvallis was under construction until recently. The stadium was going through massive renovations, and they had like half of the stadium unable to sit in. Is a half-filled Corvallis Stadium under construction still get more people than the Rose Bowl?
Against Oregon State, probably, unfortunately. I thought you were going to ask, is it still as intimidating? My answer was going to be, depends how much fog is there during the game. Because no. I don't think anyone gets better fog at the game than Oregon State.
The renovations are all done, though. And I got to say, the stadium has looked absolutely gorgeous on TV and in photos.
Josh, quick aside, should the Big Ten just take Washington State and Oregon State?
Yeah,
it's
so
like a pity party kind of thing. Not even a pity party, but I kind of want them.
Here's the thing that I don't know as much about Oregon State, but there's this whole thing about TV markets. Blah, blah, blah. I don't think people realize Washington State is a massive public university, and the second those kids all graduate, they drive across the state and they are in Seattle. So if you're saying Seattle is a big TV market, it's 50% Cougar fans. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So at the very least, how is Washington State not getting more looks? But for Oregon State, I mean, this is crazy. Like, Oregon State is a good athletic department. They really are investing in their football. Like we just said, they had a massive renovation of their stadium. Cal has been like renovating theirs for like 35 years. I have no idea what the status of Cal's is. Basketball, Oregon State went to an Elite Eight recently. They've cared about that program. I don't know if Wayne Tinkle will be there forever. On the flip side, Cal is like the worst Power Five basketball program. Baseball, Oregon State has multiple College World Series. What has Cal done? And people are like, well, Cal gets you the Bay Area. It's the TV market. No one cares.
I mean, the networks apparently care.
ACC's doing.
And Josh, you didn't even mention, I mean, this matters to a smaller segment of the country. Oregon State women's gymnastics, really good. They have an Olympic freaking medalist on there. They have an Jade Carey on their team, who's super awesome. So the last thing I want to say about this game, if UCLA's strength is on the front seven, Oregon State's strength on their offense, in the offensive line, strength versus strength, I think you got to like Oregon State here. I like Oregon State to win by a touchdown. So, but
the two most famous moments in Cal football history
involve a marching band.
Is Marshawn Lynch driving around the golf cart about 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And the Stanford band out on the field about 40 years ago. The band is
on the field.
There we go. Those are the two highlights.
And Marshawn hurt somebody when he did that. Didn't he, like, run into someone? I don't even remember.
I don't remember.
No, he didn't run into anybody. Everybody's darting out. I mean, he cleared that freaking field out because he was just whipping around.
Marshawn is a gift to humanity. Marshawn is what I think we want. We want more of that. Just in life in general. Okay, though, this has all been, let's say, this is all a preamble to the most important game of the week. Iowa, Wisconsin, it's going to be like 42 degrees, raining with like 30 mile an hour winds. It is going to be the most disgusting football game that you may watch all year. So, Josh, we've got a rock fight between our teams. Quintessential Big Ten, fall Big Ten weather.
Pillow fight.
As far as I'm concerned, it's a race to 13.
Probably
between between former Wisconsin Badger turned Iowa starting quarterback because of injury Deacon Hill, and a Wisconsin offense that can't even average 5 yards per attempt throwing the ball. And it's going to be so bad, Josh. It's going to be so bad. It's so bad that I canceled a trip. No, I'm just joking. But it's so bad that I'm not even going to this game, even though I was offered field passes. What are you predicting this weekend in Camp Randall, Josh?
Well, I know you are the host of the show and you like to ask us questions, but this one, I'm going to turn around on you. I think there's one deciding factor.
What's that?
How good is Wisconsin's rush defense? I know overall their defense has been pretty good. The numbers are very impressive, but just specifically rush defense.
Not great. They're too light. They're running a 3-3-5, and yeah. their nickel corner is like a $160 soaking wet. And so what you see, they bring safeties down to the box. Even then, like, their best defensive player is Hunter Waller, who's a safety, plays the dollar position in the 3-3-5 under Mike Tressel. But again, he's 200 pounds, maybe. I don't even know what he's listed at, but they're so light. And they shut down Rutgers. And Rutgers has a solid running offense. They did turn a corner, but again, they had 2 weeks to prepare for Rutgers with the bye week before that. And I don't know. I'm worried about them holding up against Iowa's rushing offense, especially considering that the Hawks got Caleb Johnson back last week. And he is the best back that they have faced all year. And they struggled against a Washington State team that was a pass first team with Cam Ward. And so this is, you know, that was the other game that they really, really struggled defensively. But, you know, they gave up a bunch of yards to Purdue. They were outgained by Purdue. And a lot of that came on the ground. And Devin Maccabee. And so that is the thing that I think Badger fans have to worry about, is the fact that this team, what they are now doing is they're blitzing a lot more, leaving their corners back on islands a lot more. And that's led to Ricardo Hallman, like, getting 4 interceptions in the last 3 games, I think. and he's been awesome, but their corners are gamblers. And so they're either going to get the pick or they're going to give up the big play. And it's a very nerve-wracking type of defense to consume as a fan. But, you know, but like I said, going back to your original question, Josh, run defense, not the greatest.
Yeah, so the reason I bring that up is Caleb Johnson, week one starter, got kind of just like a nagging leg injury, and they sat him out for several games. They kept saying he was questionable, thought we were going to see him against Michigan State. We didn't. So he's back for Purdue. First play that he runs the ball, 67-yard touchdown run. He had 134 on 17 carries. LeSean Williams, his really skilled backup, 13 carries, 74 yards. If Iowa can run the ball with that effectiveness against Wisconsin, you have to really like Iowa's chances in it. I'm kind of a pessimist. I don't know if Iowa actually has the offensive chops in it, especially going on the road to Camp Randall the last time we saw Iowa in a hostile Big Ten environment. Well, they got shut out. So, you know, if I was, you know, gun to the head, who am I picking? I think Wisconsin. But if it's played 10 times, I think Iowa can probably win 4 of them, type thing. So I think it's close.
Corey?
Hmm.
Who are you taking here?
I'm taking the weather. No. this game, I'm gonna take Iowa for defensive purposes.
Hey-o.
In a sloppy slug slaughter fest, I don't think it favors a Phil Longo offense that's still trying to find its footing.
Calling us a mucker, coach? We're like the horse that loves the muddy track.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, this favors defense and special teams, and I think Iowa has the edge on that as of right this moment. Not saying Wisconsin won't. Not saying that I'm not rooting for Wisconsin. Sorry, Josh, but I just think that's how it's going to turn out. I think it's going to be like Wisconsin 10, and Iowa 10, Wisconsin 6. Like, it's going to be one of those type games, if the weather holds the way it's supposed to hold.
All right. I think that I've been about as pessimistic as anyone in and around the Wisconsin program from what I've seen this year. So I'm going to say Wisconsin wins 13-10, because I don't think I think that they learned enough from shutting down Rutgers last week and are confident enough to just say, go ahead and try to beat us, Deacon, like, and just put nine guys in the box the entire time. Put two guys on Eric All and just say, okay, like, good luck, because the Hawks didn't even complete a pass to a receiver last week. And yet still somehow Deacon Hill had more yards per attempt than Tanner Mordecai. So I'll leave it at that. Good luck to everyone who is going to the game. Stay warm. It's going to be a cold one like we talked about. But before we head out, it's time for one for the road, or sometimes you guys have two for the road, and I don't blame you. I, though, am really interested in, you know, I know that it's, you know, the night game at Notre Dame is what everyone's going to be watching on Saturday, and I'll have that on one screen. But on the other screen, you know what I'm going to be watching, guys? Wyoming at Air Force.
Oh.
Because don't look now, Wyoming has turned into the team this year that I thought they were going to be last year. They are studs. They took care of Fresno State in impressive fashion last week. They are now 5-1. Their only loss is at Texas, and they were in that one late in the game. Texas scored a couple garbage time touchdowns to extend the the eventual margin of victory, but they were with Texas every step of the way there. They are in Colorado Springs this weekend against those undefeated Falcons. The Falcons have the nation's top rushing offense, 330 yards per game. Gentlemen, pop quiz here. Name the other nine of the teams in the top 10 of rushing offense per game nationally. So we've got Air Force at number one. Josh, give me one of the team that is in the top 10 nationally in rushing this year.
I don't know if they did it, obviously, with the Georgia game, but Kentucky was running all over some teams. So I'm tempted to take Kentucky.
Sorry, Kentucky is not correct, even though you were right. Ray Davis has been an absolute animal for Kentucky, but they're not in the top 10. Coach?
I'm going to say Penn State.
The Nittany Lions of Penn State are 24th. In the country at 194.8 yards per game. Mind you, Air Force is at 330 yards per game.
Okay, so got a ways to go.
Yes, gotcha. Got a ways to go.
Michigan.
Just gotta catch up a little
bit. Michigan's got to be up there.
Michigan is 37th, 185 yards per game.
Mm. What? How do they score these points?
Short fields, like you talked about earlier, Coach. Short
that's
fields.
True. That's true.
Short fields.
I haven't watched much Michigan football. That's probably why.
I'm gonna go with a safer pick. I'm gonna go back to Academy. Army just looks terrible this year, so I'm gonna try Navy.
Navy's correct. Navy is fourth in the nation, 248 yards a game. Okay. Coach. I'll be surprised if you guys get numbers 2 or 3 or 9. But we got a bunch of Big 12 teams. We got three Big 12 teams left in the top 10.
Okay, that's so cool. we gotta say. Well, we gotta say it's got to be Kansas State.
Kansas State, no.
They run the hell out of the ball.
No, Kansas State is 18th. But their in-state rival Kansas is number 6, 232 yards per game.
I was gonna say with Daniels being up and down, Kansas has just been running the ball left and right.
Correct.
You said three Big 12 teams?
Mm-hmm.
It's not Tech.
And don't forget about the schools that that are new to the conference.
I know. Tech likes to pass it. Texas likes to pass it. Oklahoma's pretty balanced. West Virginia doesn't really have an offense despite their record. BYU does not have a great offense.
BYU officially part of the conference now?
Yes, it is.
Since he's coached by an incompetent person, so.
Wait, they're Big 12 this year? I thought that was next year.
It's all this year, Coach.
Oh, okay. All right. Iowa State has no offense.
Got to be Oklahoma then, right?
No, Baylor. Baylor has no offense. I think I'm going to go with the Gus Bus.
That is correct.
UCF has a good offense.
Gus Bus, fifth in the nation, 246 yards per game. But Cincinnati is also there in the top 10, Josh, 220 yards per game. Rounding out, number two.
They're just terrible in the red zone. That makes sense.
Number two.
They're great for 80 yards.
Liberty. Liberty, 253 yards per game. Toledo, 249 yards a game. Navy, Toledo. UCF, Kansas, Tennessee, 230 yards a game. Oregon, 225, Louisiana, them Raging Cajuns, 224, and Cincinnati round out the top 10. The most amazing thing, though, the gap between Air Force and Liberty is 76 yards per game. So, in which is the same amount as the gap between Liberty at number 2 and I believe Miami of Ohio at number 48.
I was curious, so I looked up who was dead last. Probably not a surprise based on their head coach. Timmy Chang's got Hawaii with the dead last offense of a rushing attack.
Yeah, and BYU is just above or below them, depending on how you count that, at 63 yards per game. But so quick pop quiz for you guys there. But the winner, Air Force, not just great at rushing offense, also the number 2 defense in yards allowed per game. They're clicking on all cylinders. Winner of this one has pole position in the Mountain West heading into the second half of the season. That's why I'm watching this one, guys. Josh, what are you watching for? What is your one for the road?
All right. So as longtime listeners know, right when we get to like week 6, 7, 8, somewhere around there, kind of like the midway point, I like to run through all the standings and talk about like which teams still have a chance to make a bowl. And so in preparation for that, I was looking at some standings, and there are 3 teams that kind of caught my attention. So I want to go first with Utah State. I saw them week 1 against my Iowa team. They weren't very good at Iowa. And I was like, okay, we can write this team off. Then a few weeks later, got blown out by that Air Force team you just mentioned. Well, little did I know, they have won back-to-back games. They're up to 3-3 overall, and they host a Fresno State team that just looked completely discombobulated a week ago. Now, Fresno will probably get back on track, but it's a huge opportunity in Logan for those Aggies. So that caught my eye. A similar story, UNLV. I saw them against Michigan for the blog. Michigan just crushed them. A week later, UNLV beats Vanderbilt. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Vanderbilt just must be terrible. Well, that Vanderbilt win was the first of 3 in a row. The Rebs are 4-1, 1-0 in conference, and they play winless Nevada this week. So great chance for the Rebs to keep it going, get to 5 wins. If they do that, you got to love their chances for making a bowl because they still have a few more struggling teams on their schedule. And then last but not least, we love him. We talk about Jerry Kill whenever we can. New Mexico State, inexplicable loss to start the year against Massachusetts. 2 weeks later, they get blown out at Liberty. Well, since that game, they've gone 3-1. They won earlier this week, yesterday, I think, against Sam Houston. They're 4-3, 2-1 in conference. They have some wins still on their schedule, looking good for a bowl. And their quarterback, local kid, well, from Albuquerque, but local enough for the state, Diego Pavia, leading rusher on the team, and he's the quarterback. He's like a one-man wrecking crew. So those, giving some love to some teams out west that caught my eye.
All right, Coach, okay. What's your one for the road?
That was a very in-depth analysis on those matchups. Well done, man. Well done.
Coach, go three for 3 and pick a random Western game to talk about.
Okay, let's do it then. Well, this is not a Western game, but this is random. Georgia Southern, James Madison is one for the road. James Madison, 5.5-point favorite since coming into FBS against a Georgia Southern team that – yeah. Yeah, last year. I know.
NCAA needs to get them into a bowl. This is so stupid.
I know. This is.
They're not going to drop back down. Like, let them stay up here.
Yeah.
They're not going to turn down the TV money. It's
absolutely
inexplicably stupid. They let North Carolina's wide receiver back on. Shannon and I was getting to practice because it turned out that gambling investigation was like all smoke, no sizzle there.
Yeah.
Do the right thing, NCAA. You've already relaxed on two things. Let this Duke's team. Yeah,
seriously.
They're gonna completely dismantle Georgia Southern. But okay, you want a random game out west? Boise State and Colorado State, San Diego State and Hawaii as the nightcaps, man.
Boise State's good, but the rest of those teams are.
If you want to see some bad football at 3 a.m.
No.
Or 1:45 a.m. Central Time, just cut those two things on if you're up late.
Coach, you and I will be watching football together on Saturday, and I will have had one too many Miami Vices, and yeah. I will be unable to watch football at 1:45 in the morning.
Coach, I don't think that was random enough. The Western game I was really hoping you're going to is everyone's favorite stadium in the NCAA video game series. The Kibbe Dome. The
Kibbe Dome in Idaho.
The Kibbe Dome.
Oh, the
Kibbe Dome. Moscow.
5-1 Idaho, 3-0 in the Big Sky, hosts 5-1 Montana.
Montana.
2-1 in the Big Sky. This is
I wasn't going that random. I was trying to find one in FBS for you out west.
Massive FCS game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in all seriousness, one for the road. The SEC slate is interesting, so to speak. Tennessee and A&M face off in Knoxville. That'll be game of the week. See that Jimbo and Bobby Petrino soap opera finally get off and going to where it should be after last week's second half disaster against Alabama. So there you go.
And that'll do it. And that'll do it for us here on the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. So thank you for tuning in wherever you are. Thank you to MikeFarrellSports.com, our presenting sponsor, BetOnline.ag, and everyone out there across the galaxy tuning in here to Illegal Motion. So on behalf of our own offensive coordinator, the coach, Corey Burton, here in Nashville, Tennessee, and our intrepid blogger from Big Ten and counting, Josh Cook, up there in Chicago, Illinois, this is Matt Perkins saying so long and see you next time on the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.